Hello, ladies and gentlemen out there on the interwebs. Welcome to episode 35 of the Writing Africa podcast. I'm your host, James Murua. So much happened in the month of August, man. I mean, we had book launches, we had book festivals, we had awards being handed out, you know, people being finalists for awards. We even had writers' books making it to the small and big screen, you know, Netflix with Angela McCullough. And we're expecting Adaobook Tricia Albanese's I Did Not Come to Be a My Chance to be featured on the Toronto International Film Festival. So it's good times to be an African writer, to be in the African writing space. We must begin on a sad note. We say goodbye to Trinidad and Tobago author Michael Anthony, who passed away on August 24th at the age of 93. He had written dozens of titles. You know, novels, collection of short stories, books for younger readers, travelogues and histories. He had been a contributor to many anthologies and journals, including Caribbean Prose, Island Voices, Stories from the Caribbean, Response, The Sun's Eyes, West Indian Narrative, The Bajan, and Beam Magazine. His most famous novels were The Games Were Coming, 1958, The Year in San Fernando, 1965, and The Green Days by the River, 1967. Rest in peace, Michael Anthony. My condolences to his family and friends. We've lost yet another library in the African literary community. This past weekend, we had the NBO Lit Fest, organized by Bookbank in venues in Nairobi. And the two venues were the Macmillan Library, which is in the Central Business District in Nairobi, and the Eastlands Library, which is in the East. The Eastlands Library is personal because I used to go there when I was a teenager, and Bookbank has done an amazing job of revamping that space. It's actually a very good space. If you're a teenager and if you're anybody who lives in the general area of Makadara and you want to find a place to read good stuff, go to the Eastlands Library and you'll have yourself a good time. I wish it was that way when I was a teenager. That festival, man, it was amazing. It was like panel discussions, readings, poetry and prose. It had, you know, it was a concert. There was everything you can imagine at a literary festival. And the names of people who showed up at the festival, wow, 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 wow. Petina Gapa, Lebo Mashile, Sitawa Namwalie, Wanjeri Gakuru, Doto Rangimoto, you know, the winner of the Mabati Cornell, now the Safal Cornell. We had Damilare Kuku. All the men in Lagos are mad. Linda Musita, who just launched her book. Ngwatile Mawiyo, the poet. Ngala Choma, the historian. Dr. Joyce Nyairo, the academic. And then, of course, there was a newly minted author, Irene Moshemi Nderitu, Zugi Swavana, Gotha medalist. And of course, I was also there, James Murua. I was actually a moderator for one of the panels. I did Petina Gapa. Amazing, amazing. They'll be posting up the videos on YouTube soon. And as soon as they come up, I'll share with you guys. It was a really amazing festival. Best experience I've had this year so far. Another festival that happened in Nairobi was the Somanami African Book Fair. I talked about it in the previous recap. And this was more of a trade fair. You know, the Somanami is a Nairobi-based bookstore founded by Wendy Njoroge and Modoni Mwiruri in 2020. And they were just, you know, allowing people to read, to buy books that they would really be able to get from over 50 countries, 10,000 copies. And yes, it was also done at the Macmillan Library. It looks like the Macmillan Library is where everybody does like really cool stuff now. There are also panels, readings for adults and children and young adults. But the one thing which was a bit unique for me is, you know, Linda Musita's debut short story collection, Mtama Road. Linda Musita is an Africa 39er. You know, she was announced to be one of the writers who are likely to influence African letters going forward in 2013. And this was her first official debut novel. I did a story about that. So if you go to writingafrica.com and look for Linda Msita, you'll see something about that. And then the other festival that we were able to track was Festival International du Livre et des Arts à Similes de Benin. It was in Benin. Unfortunately, I'm not able to get a lot of information about this festival, but I do know there are, people who went to the festival. So if you know anybody or you want to share information about this festival, please don't hesitate. Come back to us. So yeah, festivals were happening in August, and it was a very, very, very fruitful month for all of us. Award season, dude, like it started. I mean, from the beginning of the month, we just started getting news of, African writers or writers of African descent being in the running for major literary awards. Let's start with the Booker Prize. It was announced at the beginning of August, and Ayobami Adebayo and Jonathan Escoffrey are both on the long list. This is really great news. We need more of this kind of stories, and they'll be running in the running for this huge prize based in the United Kingdom. In Senegal, there's the Festival International de Littérature. They were a festival, of course, that happened. And one of the highlights of that festival is that they hand out literary awards. And this was another year. I think they did it. This is the second or third year. And they gave out three awards this year. They gave the Prix Abdoulaye Racine Senghor, which is Senegalese Nobel Prize. It went to Khalil Diallo, the local son from Senegal. Then there was the Prix International de Littérature, handed out in honor of Cheikh Hamidou Ken, one of the legendary writers from Senegal. That award was won by Mbarek Oud Beirouk. Beirouk is from Mauritania. And then the last of the awards was Prix International de Poésie, Annette Mbaya d'Anville. This is designated for a female poet and is in honor of Senegalese writer Annette Mbaya d'Anville. That award was handed out to Tanella Boni, the Ivorian. We're going to go out of the continent now. We're going to go to the USA, and they have the Center for Fiction First Novel Prize. That was on long list, and the writers of African descent were Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya, Lekisha Carr, Kashana Kaole, Kim Coleman-Foote, Esko David Johnson, Jamila Minix, DK Nuro, Tracy Rose Payton, Anis Vance, and Tyreek White. Then we go to the University of Johannesburg, which have the prizes for South African writers in English, and they have announced a shortlist. The University of Joburg, or the UJ prizes, there are two such segments. There is a main prize, and there's a debut prize for the debut. The main prize has a shortlist that features Sue Nyati, Lesego Rampolokeng, and C.A. Davids. And the debut prize has Welcome Mandla, Lishiva, Joy Watson, and Pulane Mpondo. And of course, we go to Nigeria, where they have the Nigerian Prize for Literature. This year, the prize is focused on drama. Every year, they go to they do drama, children's writing, poetry, and prose. Last year was poetry, and this year it's drama. And those in the running are Obari Gomba, Henry Akubuiro, and Abedin Abolaji Ojomu. One of these men will be going home with $100,000 when the judges announce the winner. Then, of course, there's the Pen Translates Prize, which not it's not a prize, it's an award. The Pen Translates 23, which are grants which are handed out by English Pen, and the idea is that they want to get books which are written in another language into the English language. So these are grants to a raft of novels, and two of them are from African writers. So Scholastic Mukasonga, the Rwandan, and Tufat Motare, the Comoran. Their novels are going to be translated into English. Congratulations to them. We'll finally be able to read these books. And again, we move off the continent and we go to the United States. So there's a festival called the Brooklyn Caribbean Literary Festival that's hosted every year for the last few years. Just like our friends in Senegal, they also hand out literary awards. They have two awards which they hand out. They give the Elizabeth Nunes Awards for Writers in the Caribbean and the Caribbean African Writers Prize. The Nunes Award this year is judged by Sherry Jones and Sharma Taylor. And those in the running for that award are Michelle John and Rain Afonso, who are both from Trinidad and Tobago, and Ethan Knowles from the Bahamas. The Caribbean African Writers' Prize is judged by Merle Collins, Vanessa Riley, and Fabienne Josphat. Those in the running are Shane McFarlane, Jade Jaleesa Leatham, and Caroline Johnson. And the winners of these awards will be announced at the Brooklyn Caribbean Literary Festival in September. So this month, you'll be looking out for a lot of announcements in relation to that. Then there's the Dirac Walker Prize, another diaspora prize, story prize, and it's the Dirac Walker Prize is for poetry, of course. And this year we had Botswana-born, USA-based Tawanda Mulalo on the running. I hope he wins. You know, we need some W's for our friends in Botswana. And in Germany, there is an international literature prize. This prize is handed out to, you know, books which have been translated into German. And on the shortlist this year are, you know, U.S. Sherry Jones and Senegalese Mohamed Mbogwa Sarr. And then, of course, there's the Prix Evore for African Literature. You know, this is a prize which is handed out for, you know, the best writing from an African title. It's one of the few prizes that we track in Francophonia Africa. And this year, those in the who are the finalists are Nadia Essaoumi from Morocco, Alain Gordon Gentil from Maurice, Mackenzie Orsel, IT, Jennifer Richard, Guadeloupe, Mahmoud Somare, Cote d'Ivoire, and Antoinette Tijani Allo, who has two identities. She's Jamaica and Niger. Then we move to Zambia. Zambia's Kalemba Short Story Prize is one of the few prizes that we track from that part of the world. And the winner gets $1,500. The runner-ups get $500 each. Those in the running for the Kalemba Short Story Prizes are Mika Mweta, Verbal, Boniface Msoba, Glyn Mwia, Mkande Siame, Sylvia Mwewe, and Mutale Chisulo. So that prize is actually for short story, Kalemba Short Story Prize. The interview this time is of Irene Mosheme Derito. Irene is the author of the novel Lucky Girl, which is published by Dial Press, which is an imprint of Penguin Random House, a Kenyan on Penguin Random House. We don't hear that a lot. In this interview, which was conducted at Cheche Books, just before her first launch in Kenya, she talks about, you know, the struggles that she had to go through to get this book to publication. Please note, the event was recorded at a very loud restaurant. We apologize for the quality of the sound. We really couldn't do much about it. We hope you'll get a lot of information and, you know, benefit from this interview. So, ladies and gentlemen, Irene Derito Mosheme, enjoy. We are here just before you launched your book at Cheche Books in Nairobi. And the book is Lucky Girl. Maybe we go a bit and find out. You were a journalist in the USA. Would you like to tell us how you become a journalist in the USA from Nairobi?
My story is very much like Soila's in the novel. So my story is about me being a child of Generation X with parents who are old-fashioned, who don't really understand careers in the arts. And why would you want to do creative writing? And so for that reason, I ended up doing journalism because it was a way that I could pay the bills and still write. But writing, it wasn't the kind of writing that I wanted to do. It was factual. It's not creative writing. But I persevered with that. And then...
Where were you working? Do you mind sharing?
So I worked in New York City. And then after 9/11... I moved to D.C. and I worked for a black paper, and it's actually the only black American newspaper in the country. It's about 100 years old. And it was the best job of my life because it's a small paper, so there's like very few reporters. And so because of that, you get to do everything. So you get to interview all of the people that the top reporters at the Washington Post are interviewing, right? So I got to interview Angela Bassett, Toni Morrison, Richard Blige. I got to have a huge interview with the mayor of D.C., Anthony Williams at the time. And I got to do all the things that, you know, the really seasoned, revered reporters do. Because who else are they going to send at the Afro? There's only three of us. So, basically, after that, I moved to Boston and I worked for a chain of newspapers that's affiliated with the Boston Globe. But it's like community newspapers. And then after that, I had kids and I didn't want to, you know, it's tough working as a journalist, as you well know. It's a tough career. You know, you're like, at the time it was pagers. And your pager is going off and you're being told there's a fire and you have to go. And you've got like an 8-week-old baby. So that's not happening. So I stepped away from my career, sadly, for a few years, not a few, but actually about 6 years. And during that time, we came to South Africa for reasons around my husband's work career. And in South Africa, as you well know, you can have domestic workers, you can have au pairs, you can have four maids if you want. It's like Kenya. So I was able to jump back into my career, but I went into comms, because I didn't really understand media in South Africa. It's very complex. So I didn't really want to do journalism in South Africa. So I went into comms, and I worked for as a consultant for NGOs like ActionAid and Oxfam and all that. And then, you know, always having this feeling of this nagging thing, you know, I just want to do creative writing. I just want to do creative writing. But I'm so afraid. I'm so fearful. I'm just thinking, where do you even start? I know so many people that are just like, you know, writing manuscripts and they're like collecting dust, you know, but nobody ever publishes them, or they get all these rejection letters. You know, it's like, why do I even think I can do this? Who am I to even think, you know? And then, my friends just keep telling me, stop whinging, just do it already, you know? And so finally, in 2013, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I applied to the MFA Creative Writing Program at University of Cape Town, which is a very good program. And I got in, and every year they do about 8 or 10 students, and it's workshop. So you critique each other, blah, blah. And then the next year, you write a book. That's your thesis. And I wanted to write a book of short stories. And I was told, look, short stories don't sell. It's a waste of time. You need to write a novel. And I just kept thinking, short stories don't sell where? Because I know a lot of Americans that have been debut authors with books of short stories. I mean, one of my favorite authors is June Palahiri. And her debut was a book of short stories, and she got a Pulitzer.
Yeah.
As a debut author.
Wow.
So, you know, and I was just thinking, and I was just telling my kids the other day, don't let anyone dream it for you, because their dream for you might not be as big as your dream is for yourself, right? And I just realized, they're telling me that because in South Africa, anthologies of short stories don't sell. Right, but I don't want even to be published in South Africa. My dream is bigger, right?
So you have to do a book. Initially, you want to do a short story collection, but they're like, nope, it needs to be a full-length novel.
A novel, because short stories don't sell. I said, you know what? I don't care, and I did my book of short stories, and it's the best thing I ever did, because after that, I was able to take each story and make it something. So the one story was shortlisted for the Commonwealth, and it's been published by the Yale, and it's been published by, I mean, it's just, I'm sorry to brag, but it is probably the best story I'm probably ever going to, I peaked.
It's in high school.
I peaked. I'm never going to be able to write a better story than that.
Mm.
It's set in Kenya. The story about a couple who, their little girl is being raised by a Indian Hindu nanny. And it's a very, it's just like the dynamics
I read the story.
Of class and rape, like it's just,
I read it.
Yeah? Thank you.
It's a good story.
So, yeah, so I did that, and then the woman who had supervised my thesis, who's actually been acknowledged in my novel, said to me, you know, there's two stories here that can become novels. One is the story about a Kenyan girl who goes to America and falls in love with a Black American man, and her mother is not buying, basically. And the other one is a story about the Kenyan churches, the mega churches. And I said, you know, I'm not ready to write up that book about mega churches as a novel. It's just too, it's bigger. At the time, it was bigger than my...
It's too ambitious.
Yeah. That novel, as a short story, it worked. As a novel, it's too much. As you would know, those churches are overwhelming. So even the story...
I mean, right now in Kenya, we are having issues with our churches. People are being... dying right letters.
Yeah. So that's a hectic story. So I thought, let me start with this other story, which I can relate to because I've been a Kenyan person. I've been a Kenyan immigrant in the U.S. I've been somebody that went to the U.S. kind of, not young, but before I knew who I really was, you know? And so I can kind of take those experiences and it wouldn't be as... I've never been to a mega church, so that book would be extremely fictitious. So, I started writing Lucky Girl as a novel, and it took me about a year to write it, because remember, I had a short story already, so this is not from scratch, this is, I'm developing a short story, so I'm just putting layers, adding layers, nuances, whatever, bringing in more characters. In the original short story, there are no aunties, now there's like four aunties.
Yeah, the ones who were born in a succession.
Yes. And they live with her and her granny. And so anyway, after that, I decided, you know what, I've seen this movie where people write these things and then they cannot get publishers. They cannot get... And I was like, I'm going to have to be very strategic about this. And I said, I'm going to ask people who have agents if they can refer me. It's a long shot. Or if their agents know other agents who can take on, you know, less seasoned authors.
Yeah, the new guys.
Yes, and one of the people that I talked to is Wanjira Koyange, because she had an agent at the time. And she said, no, absolutely, no problem. And she connected me to her agent, Indian shop, small Indian agency in Bangalore. And the lady said, absolutely love this novel, we want to publish you. And that's fine. And then in the midst of all that, I had asked one of my mentors, who is the dean of the creative writing program at UCT, for help as well. His name is Imran Kubadia. And Imran. And so he had said, look, you can talk to my agents. I don't know, you know, but give it a shot. And I again sent my stuff. The agent there is Maria. And I sent my stuff to Maria, and I didn't hear back for a month. And then I sent another email, and I said, Maria, I'm just checking in to see, is it, you know, just tell me, like, you know, what do you think? At the very least, give me advice. And then she said, oh, you know what? Actually, I've been at the Frankfurt Book Festival. I haven't even opened that email, but I'm back now, and I'm going to take a look. And 2 days later, she said, we want to sign you. I read the thing, I love it, and we want to sign you. And by the way, around that time, I had also approached a friend of mine who works in publishing in Boston and said, do you know any agents? And she had said, I know a literary agency in Boston. I'll throw your stuff to them. And they had come back and they had said, we do literary. This is too, like, it's too commercial. We can't take this on. We do literary, right? Okay, no problem. So I went with, I did, you know, I thought about it. And at the end of the day, I wanted to go with an agent that has a bigger global presence. It's not personal. I loved the Bangalore people, but it's not personal. It's just you think, at that point you think, I'm starting out. I need all the help I can get.
Yep.
So if I've got somebody that's more global, Pontus, they've got a huge reach, and they even have a TV department. I'm thinking, you know what, let me just go with the people that are more prominent. Because I need to, I'm starting out, I need all the help. So I go with them, and they took my book, and they said, no. What I wanted to also say, James, is people When people write manuscripts, they're too confident, maybe they're overconfident, or they do not think it's worth it, so people don't invest in an editor. And I swear, the only advice I can give people, even if you have to take a loan, swipe your credit card, get an editor. And not a copy editor. Get a person who knows creative writing. The woman that I hired was a woman who worked for Penguin Random House in South Africa. And she helped me that you can't believe. Those people tell you, like, this character needs to be more developed. This here, there's a hole. This, what's going on here? You need that person. And I swear, to this day, I believe, if I hadn't gotten that editor, I wouldn't have gotten an agent. So that editor took my manuscript from maybe 6 out of 10 to 9 out of 10. Right? They know what they're doing.
The editor is key.
And it's not easy and it's not cheap. But at the end of the day, it pays off. It pays off.
I love hearing that because that's one of the issues we have across the continent, actually, where, you know, the importance of the editor. So now you've been signed by Pontus.
Mm-hmm.
And
in Pontus, they send out, I'll never forget, it was September of 2017, I believe. And they said, okay, we like it. Go back and do some few edits here and there because they kind of know what publishers look for. And then I gave it back to them before Christmas. And 2018, January, they sent it out. And I'll never forget, February 14th, 2018, I get this spreadsheet from Maria, and the email says, this feedback is subjective, so take it with a spoonful of salt. Okay, and there's a spreadsheet that's been attached, and she sent out the thing to like 70 publishing companies around the world. And about 32 have come back, and it's like, no, 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 no. And then, out of those 32 or whatever, maybe 15 have written her an email, have taken the time to actually tell her. And she was like, this is amazing, because most times, you don't even get a response, you know. Or you get a one-line response saying, it's not for us. Or you get a one-line report saying, email saying, tell this person to not quit their day job, you know. So she was like, it's amazing. They've written 15, 16 people have taken the time to write me and say, this is the thing, we really like her. I was really thinking this book would be the one. But at the end of the day, no, it's not for me. Or she's a good writer, but no, this woman, this mother is too abusive and that's not my demographic. You know, so end of the day, it was really hard to hear. This was Valentine's Day. It was hard as hell to hear.
That's one way of spending your Valentine's Day.
Yeah. But you know what? This whole journey, there's been so many failures. There's been so many upsets. There's been so many disappointments. But you know what? You keep moving. And that was February. And then in April, I believe, I heard back. And it was a South African publisher. And they said that they want the book. And I said, Maria, I don't know. You know, South Africa, that's not what I wanted. I wanted America. And she said, you know what, Irene, it doesn't mean because you've been published in South Africa that you're not going to be published in America. And the fact you're even getting published in South Africa is amazing because this novel is, it's really American. The fact that even anybody who doesn't have that relate to those stories wants this book is something. So go with them. And I said, okay. And then about 2 weeks later, I heard back again that Random House wants the novel. It is an imprint of Random House called Dial Press.
Mm-hmm.
They focus on female authors, women's stories around women, whatever. They published extremely successful, you know, books. Right, quite recently, Hello Beautiful, Anne Napolitano. That's them.
Mm-hmm.
Those books. What are those books? They all have that F word. You know those books? F the lilies or something.
Mm-hmm.
you've seen them, I swear. You've seen, you're just forgetting.
Yeah.
Just blanking. Those are nonfiction. And she basically says, F the whatever, I'm having a drink. F the,
oh.
F, give yourself those lilies. You know?
I'm going to look for this.
Anyway, no, they've done big books. Huh? So, I said, okay. But it's always women or LGBTQ, whatever. I said, okay, you know. I spoke to them on the phone. They were really like, they really just dumped the book. And they were like, we don't want to change this book. We love this book. We love, it's about women. And it's about, there's like two male characters in that novel.
It's really women's
book. Yeah, two male characters. And really, I could easily get rid of them. And the book still would be a good book, right? Because she could easily go, actually, I'm not getting right. And I'll just, you know, she could easily have gone that way, right? So, yeah, so they took the book and we started the editing process, and that took nearly 3 years.
3 years.
Nearly. And it was the most frustrating, most testing, most, I don't know what to tell you. I know that all publishers are different. I know people that got published in SA and they were literally from signing on to bookstore was 6 months. I know people that have been published in the UK, and again, very short time. And here I am being published in the US, and it's very, this book has a lot of racial, you know, it's heavy on me. And the Americans are extremely sensitive about this thing. And I've got, as you well know, America, the publishing industry is very, very white.
Yeah.
Very white. So now I've got these two white women editing my book. And they are so like, no, we can't say that. Oh, no. There's going to be blowback. You know, and I'm going, I'm black. Even if the blowback comes, I'm black. You know? So at the end of the day, there was a lot of just back and forth and me being quite upset a lot. Because I felt like I was being whitewashed. I was being censored. I ended up asking for an authenticity reader. I got two. So I had a black American man and a black American woman. And I said, I want this book read by black people. And if they come back and they say it's offensive or whatever, I'm happy to shift the tone or whatever. And they came back and they said, there's nothing wrong with this book. One said, it even sounds like it's written by a white person.
Hey, not a white person.
I know, not a white person. You know, so I said, you see, They had censored out the N-word. I only used the N-word once, and it's when a black man is saying, look, every time white people see me, they don't see me. You know, they don't. You could have, you could be having, like, I don't know, you could be the most intellectual person. You could have the itch of Harvard on your forehead. End of the day.
Okay.
You know, that's what you are. When you're walking down the street. Until they get to know you or whatever.
So it doesn't matter what you've achieved. It doesn't matter what you've done.
When the lift opens and you're in the lift and a white woman is about to get on the lift, she has to think twice before she steps into the lift. She has to maybe grab her handbag tighter. You know, when you walk. You know, so these things. That's what they see. When they see black men.
I want you to because we've been chatting. Yeah, we're chatting about this this book, but I mean, a reader, somebody who's listening to this now, they're wondering what the hell is this book about. Do you want to give a little synopsis for somebody who doesn't really know what the book is about? What is Lucky Girl about?
Lucky Girl is a book about, to be very literal, a Kenyan woman, who has had very overbearing mother. The mother means well. The mother loves her to death. But the mother is extremely overbearing and controlling for reasons that if you read the book, you would know. I'm not going to go into that. She's an only child. Her mother is a widower. And so her mother, this is all the mother has, is this child. And she wants her to be the child that she wants to mold. And so because of that, she's extremely overbearing. You know, it's like, this is what you're going to study. This is what you're going to do, you know? And poor Soila is just wanting to just be left alone and live her life. And so she wants to go study in the US. And she fights for it. And eventually she goes. And when she gets there, she has to deal with a lot of things that she didn't realize. I don't know, when she was going, she had this idea of America being like, I don't know what she thought America was, right? So
Hollywood America.
Right? So that's the America anyway. We got fed in our time because there was no social media.
Mm.
Now with social media, my Gen Z nieces in Kenya know that actually I don't even want to go to America. Maybe I want to go to America for just to visit. I don't want to live there because they've seen social media. They've seen George Floyd. They've seen a lot. They've seen guns. They've seen things that they're like, what is this? In our time, what did we know? We knew what we were shown. Dallas, Dynasty.
The Three Mikes. You know? Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson
and Mike Tyson. And we, you know, the Coke ads. Everybody looked so happy drinking Coke. Like, it was, you know, it was a very different. And the Americans are good at marketing themselves. They actually make you believe they're the best country on the planet. And, you know, we know what, right? So, that's what Soila knows. And she gets there and she's like, what is this, right? And now, her.
I want to know how it is that you've been able to. Because is this your first book events?
Yeah.
In Nairobi, yeah. You know, here at Cheche Books,
yeah.
The Textual Center, and Somanami. So how did those come about?
It's pretty much, I think some Kenyan, people in the Kenyan literary scene reaching out and saying, I still don't understand how they got advance copies. I'd have to dig more into that. But Madoni at Somanami said she got to read the mock that you have, and she just completely fell. I do not know how she got that advanced reader copy, but those.
Madoni has her ways.
Okay, so those are the people who then go and say, no, we have to get this book into the country, and then it's a miracle how that thing just, and I'm sitting here and I don't even know. I don't have a clue because the Americans, they're not trying to go to Kenya. That's not their portion.
Mm.
And because, partly, Kenya is the problem. Because we don't have a strong... We need to have more publishing companies. People that say... People who are, like, clued in and who say, these are the Kenyan writers that are coming up. How do we put them into the scene?
Mm.
You know, if we have that, my goodness. You know, so Random House in New York is not refusing to send you the book. Random House in New York just doesn't know who to reach out to, you know? So when the Madonis and the whatever start to reach out, these guys are more than happy to send the books, right? They've been so supportive. They've been like, go Irene, you know, do this. For them, it's like, yes, yay, yay. But only because now there's a way in. Without having a way in, they don't know how to get in. So I think that the onus is on Kenya to do better.
We have work to do.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
So what do you anticipate is going to happen to this book? What's now the book is here, what's the next step?
I don't know. I mean, I
can't ask you to have a new book because that's just dumb.
Yeah.
But what are your hopes for the book?
I don't have any hopes for the book. I think that's a mistake. Because I think then you get very disappointed. I tend to just, first of all, look at how far I've come, rather than where we're going.
Mm.
Where we're going, we can go anywhere. Where I've come from, I can't believe I've come this far.
In a decade.
Right? I cannot believe that I was so fearful and I was so afraid of failure, and I didn't do it for so long. I mean, the fact that I'm getting published at 46, I don't know if that's sad or if that's it's good, but it's fear, you know? And the fact that I overcame that fear of failure and that I just said, okay, me, I'm just going to do it. The fact that I was able to even do it with three kids in tow, the fact that I was even able to get an agent, the fact that I was even able to get a publisher, the fact that I was even able to finish the book, because I'm telling you, it was hard. The fact that I was even able to finish the book and see it and hold it and see it on Amazon and on audiobook, the fact that I was even able to audition voice actresses and say, I don't like this one and I don't like that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I look at how far I've come and I'm just so grateful. And where it's gonna go, there's been disappointments. One of the things that you really hope for when you write a book is that you're going to get picked up by a book club, because book clubs put you on the map and they actually really help sales. And it was so disappointing for me that the book wasn't picked up by Oprah or Reese or Jenna. You know, those, as stupid as it sounds, they actually help sales. And I didn't get that. And that was disappointing. And I knew immediately, because, you know, with sales, you can see the trajectory. So I knew immediately that's going to hurt my book. Those are the things that I say, okay, you know, God, I'm so thankful. So I don't even know how Harper the magazine, the elite magazine, Harper's Bazaar, you know, 20 summer, one of the 20 summer reads. I'm like, what?
Not bad.
Right? But even with all that, you know, you can't predict sales. And it's a week today, and I know that there are books that come out, and in a week, they're like...
New York Times.
Right? So, you know, I can't... These are the disappointments. But I'm not going to sit and, you know, cry about that. Like I said, I want to look at how far I've come. The fact I'm even sitting here with you, the fact I'm even going to have this book event. Do you know what I mean? Like, because then, you know, you always can write a second book. Maybe the second book. And when I look at, like, Chimamanda, Purple Hibiscus, I only knew about after she wrote Two Sons or whatever.
Half of Ayolo.
Yeah. You know? So, look, there's hope. There's hope. There's hope. It might not be with this book, but...
Well, at least now you're a novelist. You're published.
Yes, I'm a published novelist, and my next book deal is not going to be as hard to find as the first one, right? So we have to be grateful for where we're coming from, rather, right? So where we're going, you don't know. And, you know, there's no point sitting about it and hoping or crying. Or, you know, it's just unnecessary stress. So that's the story of the book, Lucky Girl's Journey from Birth to Bookstore.
I think this will be a good place to wrap up this interview officially. Thank you so much, Irene. I really enjoyed this half an hour we've been chatting on this machine. And good luck with the book going forward.
Yeah, thank you.